This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
All right. All right. Let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right. Thanks for joining us. It is hour number two as we continue along on a Wednesday on Sports Map Radio. We got the good, the bad, the dumb coming up. You don't want to miss that. And then we're also going to talk to Ryan Clark, ESPN NFL analyst, also played safety for a number of teams, including the Pittsburgh Steelers. And when he was in Denver back in 2007, he realized he had some sort of ailment that could, you know, really was problematic at high altitudes, and he couldn't play for the Steelers when they would go to Denver. But he has turned into a very, very good analyst on television, very opinionated. And we're going to bounce around the league and talk about some, but one of the questions I do want to ask him is what he thinks of the league today. Look, we all know the NFL is a healthy league, no doubt about it, and it's going to remain healthy. There's really nothing that can take it down. I mean, Lord knows people have tried. Concussions, you name it. I mean, there's been a whole bunch of people that have tried to take down the NFL from its very, very high perch. But look around the league right now, and there's just a lot of things that are going on with it that are not necessarily good, right? The Deshaun Watson hiring, or the signing, I should say, in Cleveland really raised a lot of eyebrows about what exactly are we doing here. You know, we still have 20-plus accusations on the books. We still don't know exactly where this investigation is going to go from a personal conduct policy. They gave him all that guaranteed money because he could play quarterback, and there's no sort of sense that there's a morality attached to signing Deshaun Watson. But when you look around it also, you've got Calvin Ridley out for a year for gambling when the league is in bed with a bunch of sports books, online sports books, and whatnot. But also, too, I think that the sport is just incredibly healthy despite all of these things. But I wanted to get his thoughts on that as well. So we'll talk to Ryan Clark about that coming up in later on in this hour at about 40 past, in about 32 minutes. We'll talk to him about that. We'll also get more into the NBA postseason. Two big important home wins last night. The Celtics cruised in their win against Milwaukee, and a very, very good back-and-forth affair last night in Memphis as the Grizzlies evened up their series with Golden State 1-1, and Ja Morant is really starting to emerge as a playoff superstar. He is always a very good player, one of the candidates in the conversation for, you know, MVP early. But remember, this is a guy that when he was out, Memphis not only kept winning, they kept winning big, but he's really showing how valuable he really is to this organization. And valuable to the league, too, to have a young upcoming star, a part of another group of young stars that are emerging, whether it's Nikola Jokic, whether it's Luka Doncic, whether it's Giannis, a bunch of players that are starting to emerge that are going to be the face of this league down the stretch. All right, but coming up next, you don't want to miss the good, the bad, and the dumb. I don't know if we've got the May 4th edition, but we shall see as we continue with Wake Up Call.
Wake Up Call continues now on the SportsMap Radio Network.
Time for the good.
That's really nice.
The bad.
That's the bad guy.
And the dumb.
What an idiot. Oh, what a loser.
Ah, the good, the bad, and the dumb. Wednesday edition, May the 4th beat edition. Who knows what we got for you, but here's the good of the day.
Well, the closest thing to this being May the 4th is I do have four stories.
Oh, okay, very good.
How about that? Too good. Because right. they're both quick and they're baseball related, and, you know, we need to feel good about baseball every once in a while. First one was yesterday, a milestone was reached. Dusty Baker captured his 2,000th victory as a manager.
Congratulations, Dusty Baker. And becoming a lot of wins.
Becoming the first black manager to do so.
Yeah, very good. Congratulations.
Man, that's amazing.
It's hard to do, man.
Did it in his 25th year, and I think he's, what, one of 13 or 14 men to have done that? So
yeah, it's difficult.
He's a Hall of Fame coach, right?
Manager? Without question.
I mean, I know baseball prides itself on numbers and milestone, you know, reach a number.
No, without question.
Is this one of those that just kind of throws you in there?
Without a doubt.
The other fun, good story of the day, it was a rarity in baseball. So on Monday, Mets, I think they were playing the Braves. Pitcher Chris Bassitt looked as if he got his third strike of the inning, or of this at bat, ending the inning.
Right.
But umpire Chad Fairchild called it a ball.
Uh-oh.
And extended it a little bit longer. I mean, the ball literally, you all the angles, it was knee high, just off a dead center of the plate. You know, I mean, to the point where Chris Bassett's already walking to the dugout, and it was called a ball. Fortunately for the Mets and Chris Bassett, he was able to get out of the inning a few batters later. But why this is good is in between the inning, as Chris Bassett was walking back to the dugout, umpire Chad Fairchild walked out towards Chris Bassett and owned up to it and said, "Hey, that was my bad." Right there on the field. That immediately just happened.
Well, you know.
Because you don't get that. You don't get umpires.
You don't get that at all. You know, I've heard this in the NBA a number of times. Yeah, where, you know, referees will say to a guy like, "Oh, man, I missed that foul. I know I missed that foul." They'll talk as they play. But baseball umpires, I never hear them do this.
No.
Now, I'm not saying that they don't. I mean, there might be conversations we're never privy to, right?
Right.
That we'll never know. But I never hear this. Never hear this.
The only time I've ever heard it was when Jim Joyce, later that night, he was the one who called the players safe for Armando Galarraga's
right. Perfect
game. I mean, later that night, he said, "Yeah, that was a mistake that I made." That's the only other time I ever remember any umpire.
Did he go to Galarraga and apologize to him in person?
No, never. I mean, after.
Maybe afterwards, but like not in the game.
Not in the game.
Yeah.
Sat there, heard all the boos.
Yeah, that's pretty good, man.
So, yeah, right there in the middle of the game. Hopefully that sparks a wave of people just, you know, it's like, "Yeah, you know what? I'm human. I made a mistake. Right. It's okay."
Yeah.
And we're fine with that.
No, I agree. I like that. So those are two good stories. That's awesome. Yeah. Baseball. Well done. All right, then what's the bad of the day?
This is probably my favorite bad story I think we've had. And it's horrible. But Lake Mead officials. Lake Mead is the man-made lake that was created due to the Hoover Dam.
Yep.
So Lake Mead officials predict the drought will expose more barrels filled with human remains after that grisly discovery over the weekend.
Oh, I can only imagine what that lake has in it.
So if you're not familiar with your geography, Lake Mead is roughly 40 miles away from Vegas.
Yep.
And one thing you got to know, I mean, maybe not Vegas today, but Vegas yesteryear, what did you say, back in like in the 60s, the mob ran Vegas.
Yeah. You probably go 60s, 70s, some of the 80s.
Yeah.
Before the real money came into Vegas.
So there's a prediction of like, you know, they disposed of some bodies. Sometimes it was out in the middle of a desert in a shallow, unmarked grave. Other times it was just a barrel in a lake.
Yep. Barrel in a lake. I can only imagine what they're going to uncover.
So since, that region of the United States has been stricken with drought for years, the shoreline has, the water levels have dropped considerably. And the idea of a barrel popping up that will be filled with human remains is, not lost on them. And they think, yeah, this might become a thing now.
Yeah, like in that movie Casino with Joe Pesci. That was Joe Pesci's character. Nicky was based on a guy named Anthony the Ant Spilatro. And he was a real life killer. Like he was like ruled the town kind of person. And the story that they tell in the movie Casino that's based on truth is that when Joe Pesci talks about two guys who blew up came in shooting at a little restaurant, a little place. And shot a waitress of all people, right? And then they got them. They got those. That was a true story. When I was in Vegas, I talked to a guy, and he was telling me about that story. He said, there was really a situation where there was a small little casino diner, if you will, and, guys would go there, get a bite to eat, play a little slots, whatever. And he goes, the two guys tried to rob that place, but it was a mob-owned thing. They shot up the joint, took the money. Just two random criminals,
right?
Not really attached to anything, two random criminals. And they took the money, and they couldn't find them. Like, the cops couldn't find them. But the mob knew exactly who they were and exactly how to get them and got them. And they put them – the story goes – I don't know about this part's true. The story was that they killed these two guys that robbed this place and put the bodies outside the state line for anybody in California who ever thought coming to Vegas and rob Vegas was a thing to do. That was the story.
Well, maybe the truth was that those two guys ended up in a barrel.
Yeah, but you could, I mean, like, seriously, you would be in Vegas. Like, the people told me the history of that town. It's the safest town in America. Like, mob had no interest in people thinking that it was a dangerous place to go spend money.
Oh, of course.
Like, so anybody that even threatened that town with just petty crimes were dealt with harshly, because mom and pop America needed to come to Vegas and feel safe walking the streets playing in every casino in the city.
Yep.
You know? And so, yeah, a lot of that stuff is a lot of that crazy mob past in Vegas. I found when I lived there, I loved it. I loved the old stories. I met a lot of guys who had lived there their whole lives or spent their whole careers there. And hearing these kind of stories was absolutely crazy. But, yeah, I can only imagine what's in that lake.
That's why I said it's my favorite bad story I think we've had in a long time. I mean, it's horrible.
It's like there's an idea of, if you could magically drain the oceans of all the water, like, and it wouldn't affect anything, but you could actually see the ocean floor, what you would find,
right?
What kind of ships would still be there, like what you would find at the bottom of the ocean all across the globe, right?
Yeah, like the sad one that's always told, especially around Earth Day. Was an infamous diver, I can't remember his name, not Jacques Cousteau, but a different type of diver, found a plastic bag at the bottom of the Mariner's Trench.
Oh, wow, yeah.
You know, so yeah, it's right. You know, trash.
Exactly.
But, you know,
probably
like,
a lot of trash.
Sad.
But if you could,
but I wanted
you would
the fun
see,
stuff.
You'd find airplanes.
Oh, yeah.
You'd find all sorts of stuff. You'd find all sorts of stuff. But, and so now, because Lake Vegas is having to dry, we kind of have that on a very, very, very small scale.
Yep.
Where things are starting to pop up on the surface where you're like, aha, look at this. Oh, my God.
Because the water pressure isn't there to keep that barrel down anymore.
That's right.
All of a sudden, it's like,
oh,
there's
right.
just enough for it to
you're
float
right.
up.
Exactly. All right, what's the dumb of the day?
The dumb of the day, this could be me. I could just be naive. This could be an actual scientific plus.
Oh, okay.
I have no idea. But NASA is planning on launching naked pictures of humans into space in hope of attracting alien life.
What? Like, what is the point of that? I saw that story, but I didn't read it. So
now,
what,
it isn't.
What was the theory behind why this works?
It isn't photos. They're going to be drawings of men and women alongside like a strand of DNA.
So are they trying to tell the aliens this is what we look like?
I guess so.
This is the structure of our existence.
This is what we look like. And, you know, hopes of like, why don't you send us some images? What do you guys look like?
Yeah.
I don't get that.
You know what I don't understand? I'm talking way out of my depths here. There seems to be this hubris with scientists when it comes to potential of alien life making contact with us. We're like Neil deGrasse Tyson does this a lot, where he goes, you know, why would they want to talk to us? Like, do we want to talk to ants?
Right.
Like, do you like really? Like, if you're on a planet and there's another planet with some sort of communication life, you don't want to just see what it is?
No,
like,
I
like the
hey,
natural,
I'm all
like
for that.
Natural scientific curiosity doesn't exist universally. Like if like imagine if you're on a planet and you're looking for life and you can't find any, and then you find this one blue orb in the Milky Way and you go, look, I think there's something there, and somebody goes, nah. Like I don't care what level of race you are or what level of intelligence you are. Just natural curiosity as to what exactly it is.
Yeah.
I will tell you right now, if they find 10 amoebas on Venus, we are losing our minds. Okay? If we find cockroaches on Jupiter, we would go crazy. Right? And they would go, look at them. They built these little cities and they talk and they've got transportation systems and communication systems and they barter with currency. And that's nothing to us.
I'm not even interested
in finding out who they are.
I would be curious to find out. Okay. You know, cause every depiction of an alien has two arms and two legs.
Right.
You know, and just, you know, they kind of look like us, but they don't look like us. Is that real? I mean,
right?
who
true.
Are we to think that, you know, that an alien race out there doesn't look, you know, it's like, just like looks like a squid.
Yeah. Why? Like, why? Yeah. Independence Day.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, exactly. So, you know what?
And if they get these photos, are they going to know that this is us? This is what we look like.
We've done this show now close to 4 years, And we feel like there's last couple of years has been this interest in UFOs and feel like there's more sightings and there's feel like there's something else. Like if we feel
the government
like
is saying,
the government has even come out
stuff.
And said like, yeah, you know, some of this stuff, we have no idea what it is. And by the way, it defies laws of physics just out there.
Yeah.
But yeah. So what, like I expect if I live another 30, 35 years on this earth, I kind of think that at some point I'm going to get the sort of the Independence Day moment where we're all going to be like, whoa,
there it is.
It's all on the TV. It's all on the news. Boom. But I don't believe that there is another life on the planet that's not interested in knowing a little bit more about us.
No,
I don't
very
think
true.
We're, I don't think, I, again, I know our imaginations, I'm going on a tangent here, but I know our imaginations can get the best of us, and we think of higher levels of consciousness, higher levels of communication, but you know what? We're not all that bad. Like, we're not, like, I don't think we're the same as, like, a caterpillar. You know, just kind of mold, like, we're not houseflies. Like, we've done some things. We've learned to blow each other up. We've learned to help each other out. We've created advanced systems of communications. You know, it may not be on a level of an alien, but we're not just like, you know, gnats that don't deserve any bit of attention. So stop pretending you're all that Neil deGrasse Tyson. There you go. That's basically what I wanted to say at the end. All right. That's the good, the bad, and the dumb. Ryan Clark is going to join us to talk NFL. That's coming up in 15 minutes. It's Tony D, Ron Culver. It's Wake Up Call.
Wake Up Call with Tony D and Ron Culver continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Tony D and Ron Culver.
All right, thanks for joining us. Ryan Clark set to join us. We'll talk NFL with him coming up, including his thoughts on the draft. Kenny Pickett getting the only quarterback to go in the first two rounds of the draft. May the 4th, today is Star Wars Day, so if you don't like Star Wars, have never seen Star Wars, you can try to avoid it, but I don't know if you can.
Well, one of the TVs here was left on TBS, I assume, probably watching basketball.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Unless they'd have said, nah, you know what, TBS is just showing 24 hours today of nothing but Star Wars movies.
I got
Return of the Jedi going on in the next room.
Do you get Return of the Jedi?
Yeah, it's in the next room. Very thought about changing the channel. I was like, you know, no.
What happened to this? I know when Disney got it, they changed. What happened to Star Wars? Why didn't it become after the first three that I felt like it just the quality just went in the toilet. Like,
well, I think I'm going to give the TV shows credit. I've been enjoying the TV shows.
I'm talking the movies.
I know you are. I'm giving the TV shows credit though. I like the TV shows.
I don't mind the Mandalorian, but the Book of Boba Fett was awful.
Wow, that was Mandalorian 2. What are you talking about?
Yeah,
that was fantastic.
It was terrible. But, I mean, is the problem... Look, if I bought something for $4 billion like Disney did, it would be Star Wars every day.
Yeah. It'd be May the 4th every day.
Okay, listen. There is a difference between quality art and making money. And Disney, with the acquisition of Star Wars, doesn't care about quality art. They care about making money. So they're turning these out like you would not believe. They're going to continue to turn it out because they're money-making machines. Eventually, you know, they'll stop when nobody's watching anymore. But, when I look back on Star Wars, did I like it because I was a kid? And then when I was an adult, I didn't appreciate the reattempt at it? Is that what's missing?
Maybe. You know what it is? I mean, it was... I think it was almost like the actors back then didn't know what they were doing.
Yeah.
Didn't know what they were making. And I think the actors of today knew that, like,
yeah,
oh my God,
right.
We are making, like, you know, we are part of an iconic, you know, historic franchise.
I mean...
Back then, I think they were just like, you know what, we're in this goofy space movie.
Yeah, I mean, there's no question, like, George Lucas, he doesn't write good dialogue.
No.
He's terrible at dialogue. Like, the concept of the world he created was great.
It was brilliant.
It's terrible dialogue. I mean, just basic
lines.
You
know, and his computer imaging that he uses was, I mean, it's it spawned. I mean, it's what we have today. I mean, the fact that he was able to create whole planets, like that was the best part of the Phantom Menace.
Oh, right.
Was looking at Naboo.
Yeah, sure.
You know,
it's
like,
great.
My God, how the heck did you do this?
In Empire Strikes Back, that famous line Han Solo says when he says, she says, I love you, and he goes, I know.
Right.
Harrison Ford created that because the original line was, I love you, and Han goes, I love you too. And Harrison Ford went, Han would never say that.
Yeah, let me try something.
He's like, that's awful. They used to say that. They used to read the script and go, this is crap. And they were young actors.
And maybe the actors of today are too nervous to try it.
Yeah, I don't know.
Do anything different?
I don't know. It's just, I'm just not as high on it as I used to be. When the prequels were coming out in the 90s and early 2000s, I was kind of like, okay, yeah.
I was all for it.
These last three that we just had from like 2014, 15 on the way. Man, I used to go to the movies begrudgingly. I would go in there going, I know this is going to suck. And yet I paid anyway because I just need to see it.
I mean, the truth of the matter is,
I went into Rise of Skywalker knowing it was going to be absolute garbage. I knew it was going to be garbage.
I will say this, that if you got to put yourself in the mindset of, like, I know I'm not going to see something spectacular, but, you know, I'm trying to phrase this right. Like, I know I'm not going to see award-winning material.
Right.
But so I go with the mindset, that type of mindset, that I'm seeing a movie made for kids, because those feel like movies made for kids.
Yeah, that's and the originals were, too. The first three were, too. I mean, that's one of the reasons he...
Yeah, so like I do find myself entertained.
He created the Ewoks because when he realized how much money was coming from the toys, he was like, let's make a cuddly bear group on this planet, because
teddy bear,
sell
come on,
millions and millions of dollars worth of toys. Of course he did. He played that out brilliantly. Good for him. When the studios went, you want merchandising?
But I think like the main difference, even though the kid moves, the original trilogy flows better.
Yeah, it does.
The storyline from one movie to the next, to the next, to the next, that all flows better. The last three, I mean, let's face it, Force Awakens from Star Wars. Right.
Yeah, it was. It was.
It was just Star Wars, just done a little bit differently, and everything. You know, it's exactly the same. God, I already forgot. The Last Jedi. That was the second one. Yeah, that's what it was called. Yeah, I already forgot. Yeah. I didn't get that one.
Me either. That was terrible.
It was just like one big long slow chase scene.
But I think you're right about the original, because what going back to my youth, right? These movies came out every 3 years, right? So there was 1977, 1980, and then 1983. So it was a very long time before you got the continuation of the story. And so why I think people look back on those three, and again, they'll celebrate it all day today, being May the 4th,
yep,
is that when you watch Empire Strikes Back, and I did as a 8, 9-year-old, 10-year-old kid, right? It was completely different than any type of hero-villain story I had ever seen up until that point. Because every hero villain story I'd ever seen, whether it was a Disney cartoon or whatever it was, the good guys always found a way to win. And in Empire Strikes Back, that didn't happen. Luke got killed in that movie. Like, Darth Vader pummels him with one hand on the lightsaber. Luke has no business being in that fight. And the way George Lucas shot it, he made Darth Vader even bigger because he knew what we would later find out was Darth Vader was his dad.
Yeah.
And so Luke wasn't an equal to his dad. He was a little kid rebelling against his dad. And his dad was like, stop this right now. Get back down and I'll chop off your hand too. Right? And you get Luke on the edge of that cliff, on the edge of that thing. And he's hanging on and he gets beat. Like no hero has ever gotten beat in the history of cinema. And he's hanging out with one hand and he goes, and by the way, I'm your pop. But you knew this whole time. And that's how it ends.
Well, then Luke just, you know, Luke commits suicide.
And he just goes, I can't live with this. And he jumps off and he hits it. And we had to wait 3 years to figure out how the heck that story was going to be done, how it was going to be resolved. It's crazy. Great stuff.
This is Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, welcome back to Sports Map Radio. It is Wake Up Call with Tony D and Ron Culver. Let's go out to our progressive guest line. And joining us is former NFL safety and now NFL analyst on ESPN, Ryan Clark, joining us. And he comes to us via Crown Royal. Crown Royal is proud to be the first ever whiskey sponsor of the NFL and have made the NFL season the most generous season in football history with its launch of their Kickoff with Crown Royal initiative. All season long, Crown Royal gave back and said thanks to those who serve us off the field in areas of hospitality and military. Committed to donating $1 million to these communities that have made the game great. How are you, Ryan? Thanks for joining us.
Good, my man. How are you?
Good. All right. As far as the Crown Royal Purple Bag Initiative, give us an idea of what that's about.
Listen, man, we're super excited. Listen, it was an opportunity for the NFL legends and for people who have already walked that journey to toast the 57th NFL draft class. We kind of understand, you know, what it's like to go to a new city, to try to get ingratiated into those communities, to be a part of those teams. And I just think it's awesome that they have the opportunity to embrace that. They have an opportunity to walk the same hallways as all of these guys who have done the exact same thing and continue that legacy of great men, but also great players. I mean, Crown Royal has sent over a million packages all across the country to people who serve this country, and I think they're just extremely proud to be the first whiskey sponsor of the NFL. So for me, it was truly an honor to receive the package and also an honor to get an opportunity to spread this message.
Sounds great. Again, Ryan Clark joining us, ESPN analyst, former NFL safety. So, Ryan, let's get to the start of the NFL draft. Any outside of the, maybe the quarterbacks and their situation, what was their surprise for you? What was your takeaway over the last weekend, over the seven rounds?
You know what? I think I wasn't surprised because I was prepared for unpredictability. You know, when you don't have the Trevor Lawrences, the Zach Wilsons, the Trey Lances, and all of these guys lined up early on in the draft, you can get some unpredictability. I think I was surprised and also not surprised that only one quarterback went, and I think that one quarterback being Kenny Pickett, that would be the one thing I thought, or I wasn't expecting, in the sense you thought Malik Willis was going to be the high ceiling guy, and if he got to 20, that the Pittsburgh Steelers would take him. But they went with Kenny Pickett, a guy who worked one door over. Other than that, it would probably be the lateness or how late the rest of the quarterbacks went. Think about a guy like Matt Corral going in the fourth, Sam Howell going in the fifth, and Malik Willis goes in the third. You know, Desmond Ridder goes before all of those guys. And so I think when you have a quarterback draft that is this unpredictable, that's usually one of the things that takes you by surprise. We knew it would be defensive heavy. We knew it would be position player heavy, and that's really what panned out for the entire draft.
All right, let's stay with the quarterbacks. And Baker Mayfield, he didn't go on the move during draft day. He did not get nobody traded for him, or there wasn't a trade for him. What do you think his future is in this league?
You know, I can't really say what Baker Mayfield's future is. If you look at him right now and the position that any of these teams that seem like they would be quarterback needy after the draft fill those needs with young players. When you think about the Carolina Panthers, also the Tennessee Titans, these were teams that he was linked to, Atlanta Falcons. Those places where he could go and get into quarterback competitions, it would seem that the only place left would be Seattle, who has Geno Smith and Drew Locke. Baker Mayfield's problem is not that Baker Mayfield is awful. Really, people do think that Baker Mayfield is one of the top 32 quarterbacks in this league. But if you're just one of the top 32 and not top 16, top 10, an $18 million cap hit isn't going to work for a team. Giving up high draft picks isn't going to work for a team. And also, when you're coming from a team in the Cleveland Browns that is now strapped to get rid of him after signing Deshaun Watson at $230 million, teams know they can make the Cleveland Browns play ball. And so I think all of those things play into why Baker Mayfield is still a Cleveland Brown and hasn't been moved. But I think he can go somewhere and compete, and he still has an opportunity to be a good starting quarterback in this league. He's just not going to be one of those guys that we know when he walks into a building, he changes and transcends the place that your team is in.
Playing safety in the NFL and studying wide receivers and how to defend them. There's a huge wide receiver class that is now coming in, and it has been coming in to the National Football League for a while, as the college game has really given us a lot of good wide receivers. On the flip side, they're getting paid a lot of money. Is there a point, do you think, Ryan, that teams are not going to have to pay wide receivers the kind of money they are because there is a lot of talent that's coming in?
You know, it's a weird thing. Like, you would want to say that, but if I'm Ja'Marr Chase, why would I not be expecting $100 million in 2 years? If I'm Justin Jefferson, why would I not be expecting $100 million after this year, even though they have the fifth-year option? Once people at your position begin to get paid like that, who is going to be the team, or when is the league going to say, you know what, we have to stop this? It hasn't stopped with quarterbacks. Obviously, they adjusted the running back pay scale. It's now going up in the defensive secondary as well. And I think at least for the near future, we're going to see these top-tier wide receivers get paid the big money. And, yes, there is talent coming every year because of the way the game has changed, especially at the lower level at the position. But I still think that these pass catchers are going to be at a premium. And what it's going to take is for a team like Buffalo, who has a pass catcher being paid $96 million, a quarterback being paid $258 million, to not play well, to not win, to miss playoffs. And so teams can have that as kind of their go-to and say, well, Buffalo Bills did it and it's not working. But until something like that happens, I believe these wide receivers are going to seek their money.
There is so much in the AFC now to look for in terms of these teams and how they're, whether it's teams that have been good over the years, like Kansas City and Buffalo, to Denver getting Russell Wilson, to the emergence of Justin Herbert, and Cincinnati being the defending conference champions. What's the most intriguing team out of the AFC to you?
Man, you know, the AFC is so stacked this year. I think right now it's the Los Angeles Chargers. The Los Angeles Chargers have built their offense around Justin Herbert and now built their defense around Derwin James. I had an opportunity to talk to Brandon Staley for about 30 minutes this offseason at LSU's Pro Day. And, man, the guy is sharp. He understands football. He understands complementary football. He understands building a team. And when you look at what they've added with the Khalil Mack, the J.C. Jackson, Asante Samuel Jr. Being healthy now defensively, this could be a team that turned a liability into an asset when we already know they have a quarterback that has Hall of Fame potential. And so I think the Los Angeles Chargers are the interesting team to me that could be atop the AFC West. And let's be frank, if you can be atop the AFC West, you have an opportunity to contend to win the entire AFC.
Now let's go to the NFC, because back is Tom Brady. Aaron Rodgers still in this league, but we've got the Rams as the Super Bowl champions. Any young team out there, any team that's putting it together right in the NFC to challenge those teams?
You know, I think the Los Angeles Rams are up there. The Green Bay Packers, you know, you go back, you move up, you get Watkins at 34. You build your defense. You're two guys for Georgia. Georgia in the first round, you wonder if they did enough offensively, but they still have Aaron Rodgers. San Francisco 49ers, if they can get something done with Deebo Samuel. The Philadelphia Eagles have vastly improved. It depends on what you feel about Jalen Hurts. But I still think the Rams are the team to beat right now. The Rams still added some small pieces to continue to build depth on what was already a Super Bowl roster. So right now I think they're at the top of the list. But anytime a team has Tom Brady as well, now with Todd Bowles as the new head coach in Tampa, you also have a chance.
Ryan Clark joining us again, brought to you by Crown Royal on a Progressive guest line. Overall, Ryan, and one of the reasons I love talking to you and I love watching you on TV is you're a very opinionated guy. When you see this league where it is right now and where it is heading in terms of the contracts and player movement and different things that have happened in this league, Calvin Ridley suspended for a year for gambling, and Deshaun Watson getting back into this league and his problems. Where is the league in a good position right now? It's got some problems, but the draft seems to be increasing in popularity. Is the league in good shape?
Man, the league is fine. You know what? Like this league prints money. You know, they absolutely find ways to continue to build its popularity, to continue to find ways to extend into the fans' homes, into the fans' lives, and build that experience for them. And I think that's what they're always focused on. The game is going to be the game. People are going to love to go to stadiums. People are going to love to congregate in their homes to watch one of the sports that people are in awe of what the players can do. And so I think it's fine. I think it's changing. I think it's evolving. And we know that some people don't like change, but eventually they come around to it when they realize it's either watch this on Sunday or go hang out with grandma.
I do have to ask you real quick before we let you go on your former team, and you brought up Kenny Pickett. Is that a situation where he starts right away, or does he have to develop? Is he going to have to develop into that role as a Steeler quarterback?
Well, you know, we got to realize Kenny Pickett took advantage of the extra year. That's why he's here in this position. Obviously, he comes out in 2021. He's not. I think Mitchell Trubisky is actually a more talented player. Kenny Pickett's more accurate, has more snaps, you know, coming out of college, but it's going to have to be a competition. The Pittsburgh Steelers are about competition and playing the best player at the position. And so if Kenny Pickett has to wait a year or two to get in there, it's going to be on him. If he excels, if he picks up the playbook very fast, and he can give them the best chance to win, then Kenny Pickett plays. If not, they roll with Mitchell Trubisky and try to do some of the things I think he's learned from backing up Josh Allen in Buffalo.
Again, Ryan Clark joining us, brought to you by Crown Royal and their Purple Bag Initiative, partnering up. I really appreciate you, Ryan. Thank you so much, as always. Appreciate it.
Right, thank you so much. You have a great day.
You got it. And Ryan Clark is on our Progressive Insurance guest line. Progressive Insurance, bundle and protect today under one roof. Learn more at progressive.com or call 1-800-PROGRESSIVE. All right, it is Tony D, Ron Culver. It is Sports Map Radio as we continue.
Listening to Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Again, thanks to Ryan Clark for joining us in the last segment to talk some NFL football. So, you know, I think he's great. I think he's one of the more opinionated guys. I really like Ryan Clark. You know, what's going on with the Tennessee Titans is interesting because Ryan Tannehill has come out and said that he was very disappointed in the team for letting A.J. Brown go, obviously. But also drafting Malik Willis. They didn't exactly consult him on that one either. But it's really interesting because we talk about the AFC, and I was talking to Ryan about this, how loaded the AFC is, right? And I think every one of us has a team or two that they're watching to see how they navigate through that. So, if you're a Buffalo fan, you know, even if you're not a Buffalo fan, you might look at the Bills and be like, okay, are the Bills ready to take that step and become a Super Bowl participant out of this very tough AFC? How are the Cincinnati Bengals going to do in trying to repeat as conference champions? How long does the Kansas City dynasty last, right? I mean, all of these different equations. And then we've got new, you know, quarterbacks coming in like Russell Wilson, whatnot. Justin Herbert is going to start rising up again and maybe do some things for the Chargers that make it interesting. But look at Tennessee. Look at the Titans. Titans played football very differently than the other really good teams in this league. They don't have a superstar quarterback. He's not a game manager. That's an overused phrase, but he does manage the offense pretty well. But remember, in that game against Cincinnati, against the Bengals, defense had 9 sacks. 9. And they turned the ball over 3 times and lost the game at home to the Cincinnati Bengals. They lost the game. And I think there was a point where the management said, look, we're going to put every single person on this team and put them on notice a bit, maybe except for Derrick Henry. But some of the key participants on this team, look at what we just did with A.J. Brown. We shipped him out. Now, he's an important player, no doubt. But we found his replacement. He's going to be cheaper, and we found his replacement. We're not afraid to do it. Do not think for 1 second, because the window of us potentially winning a championship is, you know, with what we have here is relatively small, that everybody is safe. And that goes for the quarterback. That goes for the quarterback. Malik Willis, drafted in the 3rd round, was projected by many to be a 1st-round pick. Now, what he really is still going to be up for debate. But will he get his opportunity in Tennessee? Yes, he will. Because the Tennessee Titans are not afraid to make changes when they need to make changes for the good of the franchise going forward. And I think that's a really interesting development in an AFC that is loaded up now. I mean, Matt Ryan is now in the division playing for the Indianapolis Colts. right? There is a feeling like if you look around this league, the Dolphins are going to be better. The Patriots are going to try to hang on. The Bills are very good, right? You look in the North, Cincinnati is the defending champions. Baltimore had a great draft, and if they're healthy, are going to be a threatening team. The Steelers and the Browns have got some work to do, but they're not going to go 2-15. So if you're Tennessee and you see how tough it is in that conference and you still are like, and we're drafting your replacement and we drafted your replacement, A.J. Brown, and shift you out to Philadelphia. I mean, to me, it's an interesting way a team is handling this sort of new look into that conference. We're not afraid to make changes at critical positions. And I don't know if Malik Willis sees 1 second of time in his first year. I think he's going to have time to grow. But if I'm Ryan Tannehill, I'm pretty nervous about my long-term existence in Nashville and whether or not I'm going to continue to have a career in Nashville. They didn't draft Malik Willis in the first round, so you can't obviously, like Kenny Pickett. Like if you're Mitch Trubisky, you know Kenny Pickett's time is going to come sometime. You're not going to be the starting quarterback of the Steelers much longer. You can take a third-round pick and wait a little bit. But that being said, it is everyone's on notice for a team that has looked around the AFC and said it's tougher, but we'll make changes in the future. Hour 3 coming up next. We'll actually talk some NHL. We'll get some thoughts on the postseason, which started soon.